cognitive for me personally. I'm still struggling with this 120 and 90. But when I was doing more this 90, which is 120. But again, the agenda in front of us. Do we have any apologies?
Good morning to everyone. We've got apologies from Ms. Nkata and Ms. Jasta. And Mr. S.K. Vini would like to excuse later on, so he's got another excuse.
Okay. On that note, we have a presentation. Maybe let me say this before honorably this case is necessary. You will recall that we were supposed today to be dealing with the issue of transfer pricing. This matter was on the agenda sometime, and we agreed to put it aside so that we deal with the issue of the Famosa Aurora litigation. And we had the 18th, the 19th, that remained a little bit vacant. Subsequent to that, we tried to battle with the AG's office, and we spoke with the Committee on Finance. The request was made that we do together with Finance that presentation be done in a joint committee with Finance. Because of the progressive nature of this committee, we succeeded to secure that it be on a Wednesday. Because one, they were not ready for the presentation. Two, was that they were going to be here anyway on the 18th. So we requested, because I'm sure there might be two or so of us who could make it on a Tuesday, because Tuesday some members of this committee are on other committee. So we then said, no, if we agree on a Wednesday, we will just postpone that presentation for a week on Wednesday. So Wednesday we'll be having together with the Portfolio Committee on Finance that presentation on transfer pricing. So that's what we agreed on. Then we said, let's bring forward this outstanding matter. Fortunately, our dear friend, whenever told that they will not be coming to do a presentation, they were already on the agenda. The only thing was when. So that is what happened. And I think the committee will bear with us, because we wanted to be reasonable. So that is the issue. We will then get the presentation from the department. Mainly, it will be focusing on one environmental system. And because these are two separate presentations, we will prefer that we deal with them in terms of questions and clarities. And then we will go to the second presentation on derelict and ownerless mine. I think that is what, as usual, those who have been here before, this is their familiar faces. Let's make sure that we do the best thing that we do. a presentation on digestive matter. You must be careful to eat something that may be unwasted. So, you do your best to give us what you know is going to be good for the system. Otherwise, it's, I think, as I always say, doesn't have to prepare an assignment that is going to be taking place in such steps, probably would only be meant in the next stage. So I'm not saying you would weigh what you think is good for this committee to consume. We are not going to say because you've got lesser slides and say you are late. Because it's about what is the content, what do you want to convince this committee on, what do you think this committee. It may be small, but it may be loaded with many options or possibilities. So that is what we do. So I'm sure the department knows. You will then introduce your teams that you are doing the presentation. So you start on the ones who are dealing with the issue on the environmental system.
Thank you and good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Joel Rattel. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for mineral regulation. And with me is the team from the department. But before I proceed to allow for introductions, let me take the opportunity to also tender apologies for Minister and Deputy General who are overseas on an official trip, and our Deputy Minister who is in Cabinet, as well as other colleagues, DDGs on mine health and safety for our APCG. I would perhaps maybe just allow my colleagues just to introduce themselves. I will be taking honorable members in the committee to a presentation on the one environment.
Good morning, honorable chair and members. My name is Mosa Maguza. I'm the DDG responsible for mineral policy and promotion.
Morning everyone. My name is Jim. I'm the director.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Kaya Matrose. I'm in the office of the DG. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Kwazi Mhlongo, in the office of the DG.
Good morning, Chair and Members. My name is Mhlongo Makakula. I'm the PO.
Thanks, Honorable. Members and honorable chairpersons, can you move to the next slide, please? In terms of the presentation outline, we will be taking honorable members through, number one, the rationale for the new system for mining. I'll be taking honorable members through the rationale for the new system for mining, environmental and water authorization. We'll reflect on the challenges that accentuated or led this new initiative, the process that we followed to streamline the licensing processes, the governance structures that we involved in effecting the alignment. We'll outline what was the brief and outline the application system in terms of how it's been met. We will then take honorable members in the committee through the alignment of the prospection right process. Similarly, the alignment of the mining right process. We'll outline the resource implications of the alignment process. And then we'll take also reflect on the elements of the implementation plan. Where are we? And then we'll conclude our presentation. Next slide. In terms of the rationale for the new system for environmental and water authorizations, Honorable members would recall that we have a mining sector strategy for sustainable growth and competitiveness of the industry that identified fragmented licensing system as one of the constraints to affecting investments within the South African mining space. And some of the consequences in no particular order of that was that investment could not be unlocked as some mines ended up being perceived to be operating illegally. There were also instances where there was uncertainty within the investment climate. There were excessive lead times for investment decisions because of the manner in which licensing was then perceived and executed in South Africa, leading to perceptions of South Africa being seen by others as a high-risk investment destination. We all are aware that investment into mines involve tens of millions and or in some cases hundreds of millions, if not a few billions of rands. And there were some documented negative press reports relating to some mining projects as being deemed to be illegal, thus leading to investment in our space perceived by others to be deemed not safe. Next one. Now, in respect of the challenges before the initiative, in South Africa, you had three departments still have a regulating environment for one industry, which is mining. You have an environmental plan and or program for mining rights, which is regulated by BMR through the NPRDA. Environmental authorization, which is your listed activities, regulated by Department of Environmental Affairs, including the provincial department, environmental affairs, and the water use licenses, which are regulated through the Water Act by Department of Water and Sanitation. Now, the implication is that their respective rights and authorizations are often processed consecutively rather than concurrent. And the consequence, as outlined earlier on, excessive lead times for investment decisions and perceptions of South Africa being seen by others as a high-risk investment destination, leading to potential loss of investment, negative media reports, and investment in mining not seem to be safe. Right. Now, with regard to the process that we followed to effect the streamlining, in February 2008, the Department of Environmental Affairs and the BMR, then BME, agreed on the principle of the one system to regulate all environmental matters pertaining to mining. The agreement, though, reached could not be implemented due to some challenges. In giving effect to the agreement, then the National Environmental Management Act was amended in 2008 to give effect to that agreement. Similarly, the NPRDA was amended in 2008, but only promulgated on the 7th of June 2013. In March 2012, in giving effect to the same agreement, the DGs of GMR as well as the Department of Environmental Affairs met to recommend options to ministers to be considered. Now, in terms of the process that we followed and streamlined, there were a matrix of three policy options on how to handle mine environmental environmental function that were developed. The first option was to move environmental function to Department of Environmental Affairs, which would have required legislative amendment of the three pieces of legislation, the National Water Act, NPRD, and NIL, and this posed constitutional challenges. And the second one was to keep the environmental function at GMR, include listed activities, and move appeals on environmental matters to the Department of Environmental Affairs. These two would require legislative amendments of the three pieces of legislation that I referred to, as well as a time frame alignment with Department of Water Affairs or Department of Water and Sanitation. The third option was to leave, that is the status quo, leave functions where they are in the three departments. And the implication was effect the integrated licensing system across the three departments, effect legislative amendments, and help joint decision making, which also has implications. After considering the three policy options presented to ministers, the ministers in principle agreed on the option number two, i.e. set environmental options. Environmental authorizations would, in respect of mining prospecting, would be regulated under the 150 prescribed by NEMA, which is National Environmental Management Act. And two, the principle was that Minister of Mineral Resources should be the designated competent authority in terms of NEMA to implement the environmental system relating to mining or prospecting. Three, the Minister of Environment will be the designated authority to deal with appeals related to environmental authorizations in respect of mining prospecting. The fourth principle was the NPRDA and NEMA legislation had to be amended accordingly to give effect to the agreement. This slide seeks to highlight the governance structures that were put in place. At the time, it was the two ministers of mineral resources and that's when environmental affairs and water affairs at the time was still one under one minister, but it's the three ministers and below that are the three DGs of the Department of Mineral Resources, Environmental Affairs and Water and Sanitation, who under a structure called Interdepartmental Project Implementation Committee, on a rotating basis chair the coordination of these very important projects. And this project committee had six tasks. The first one dealt with joint planning. Joint planning dealt with matters such as spatial planning and alignment of systems. And the second one dealt with capacity, and that appreciated the capacity implications of this exercise. The third task team dealt with coordinated timeframes. This is the one that sought to align the various business processes to give effect to a one environment system. The fourth task team dealt with legislative amendments. This is the one that piloted through various governance structures, the amendment of various pieces of legislation, including the implementation at an appeal level with regard to which competent authority will be responsible for what. The enforcement one, task team, is the one that coordinated joint enforcement activities of the three departments. And the sixth task team is the one that deals with communication, to appreciate the communication implications of this initiative so that the stakeholders across the various areas are always brought on board. In terms of the briefs that were given to this team, one, the mining and prospecting processes had to follow, will follow the NPRDA process, and the target was that in respect of mining rights, that it had to be 300 days, and in respect of prospecting rights, 180 days. The second brief was that the environmental authorization in terms of National Environmental Management Act and Water Use License applications in terms of the National Water Act will be initiated directly after the acceptance of an application in terms of the NPRDA. And the third brief was that the process will run parallel and the decisions will be taken simultaneously. As an outline of the application process, flowing from the brief, applications lodged are processed in the following phases. The first phase of an application deals with the acceptance and or rejection of applications, that is after they have been lodged, and linked to the NPRDA section 16 dealing with the prospecting and 22 dealing with the mining rights applications. Rejections will take place within 14 days of receipt of an application. Then the second phase of the application process, this one deals with the adjudication. This one is internal to the department. There's 180 days for environmental management plan to be submitted and the program in 120 days to approve in an EMP. And other adjudications are aligned to the EMP timeframes, as we will demonstrate later on in the slides. In terms of the NEMA, environmental authorization timeframes is still aligned. The third phase deals with the decision making relating to granting and or refusal of the application. This is governed by the granting criteria in the NPRDA, both in terms of Section 17 and Section 23 of the NPRDA. The time frames are aligned to environmental authorization time frames as to both NPRDA as well as the NEMA. And the fourth or the last phase the social media page. And in this case, it's important to highlight that no subsequent rights should be considered while the appeal is pending. With regard to the alignment of the prospecting right process, the next slide. In respect of this slide with the main colors, what I just need to highlight is this is the most important slide that seeks to integrate various processes by the three competent authorities or the departments that used to regulate one environment system. The part on the far right, that is the one that is in green at the top, is written MPRDA, talks to processes that DMR in terms of the MPRDA need to execute as part of processing of an application away from the environmental management issues. And with regard to that one, if I was just to spend a little bit of time and just contextualize that, the processes relating to the processing of an application would unfold whilst the one on the environmental management side also unfolds in terms of the processing of an application. The one immediately after that, which is in blue, is the water use license, WUL, stands for water use license. What is important to also highlight is that after an application has been launched and it has been accepted, it needs to be accompanied, because we are now running processes parallel, no longer consecutive. It's important to highlight that the process relating to water use license authorization will also be initiated. Then moving further on to the left, the process relating to air emission license, that is AEL, would also be running parallel. And then next to that one, the process relating to waste management license, which WML, would also kick in. And the most important one is the one on the far left, the one that highlights that after an application has been accepted, which needs to be accompanied by an application for environmental authorization. For prospecting rights, it needs, where DMR is the competent authority in terms of the NEMA, such an application needs also be accompanied by a basic assessment report as well as an environmental management program and a closure plan. And this just process in terms of the timeline that was highlighted there. And where a MEM decision, that is MEM stands for Mine Environmental Management Recommendation, the time frames that are involved there were 247 days. And a decision in respect of a prospecting right, looking at the aligned time frames, is 180 days. And in respect of substantive issues is where a lot more work needs to be done on the environmental management side. There is an additional 50 days that also is set aside. But what is important to highlight is that ultimately the time frames that are not being followed with regard to processing of environmental authorization and all prospecting rights is now properly aligned in terms of various business processes. And if then one were to move further to the next slide. A few points to highlight is that the time frame kicks in when the application for environmental authorization is received. As I outlined, that the left column represents time frames for all environmental authorizations in the country, irrespective of the date and whom the competent authority is. So all of us are guided by the same piece of legislation. And the third bullet to highlight is that the DMR is now the competent authority for environmental management issues to the impact of the prospecting site. And waste management licenses relating to prospecting will also be issued by the department. So when a decision is taken with regard to the granting of a prospecting right, all the relevant approvals are supposed to be in place. So the principle of joint decision making then imbued in the system. the next slide. Air quality licenses relating to prospecting will be migrated to the DMR once constitutional issues have been resolved. And the time frames will in total be 180 days as I indicated, until the date of issuing of environmental authorization. Department of Water and Sanitation will run their process in parallel, as I outlined. Depending on the catchment, they will not achieve the 180 days, but will achieve the 300 days for decision, as in case where the water use license will take 4 months or longer than DMR. Next slide. With regard to the mining rights process, I will also do the same. The difference in this case is that, as I outlined earlier on, the brief is 300 days. And what is important to highlight is that in, as with the prospecting rights, in the event that there are substantive issues, the an additional 50 days is added to the process. But the time frames are as outlined there, and they are regulated in terms of the law. Can you move to the time frame kicking when application for environmental authorization is received as part of an application. The left column represents the time frame for all environmental authorizations, as we outlined earlier on, in the country, regardless of the sector or who the competent authority is. And the DMR is the competent authority for environment, not environmental management related to the impacts of prospecting and mining. Waste management licenses relating to the site will also be issued by the department. Air quality licenses relating to mining will be migrated to DMR once the constitutional issues are resolved. The total time frame, 300 days for mining rights until the date of issuing of environmental authorization. Water and sanitation will run their process in parallel and also achieve 300 days to a decision. Next slide. On this slide, we are seeking to demonstrate, if you generally looking at the time frame, the scenarios in the two pieces of legislation. If you look at the FTRDA scenario, what we used to have is there was 180 days to submit an EMT post acceptance of an application, which then included 60 days for consultation with the competent authorities, which are Department of Environmental Affairs, Water Affairs, and so on. And whereas with regard to the NEMA scenario, the process is different because an applicant needs to apply immediately for an environmental authorization. Also, there is a lot of saving on the time frame. The next part on the NPRDA, the public participation, the scoping report submission, as well as the days towards acceptance and or rejection and finalization of the MEM report, there is a difference in terms of the time frame. This is after an EMP has been submitted. There's a difference in that in the NEMA scenario, there's a lot more time available for strengthening and quality assurance on matters relating to public participation, consultation, competent authorities, and review of documents submitted, and ultimately on the MEM recommendation. Whereas if you were to look on the NPRDA process, the process was much more tighter. Whereas on the NPRDA side, in terms of the meeting, there is in terms of the NEMA scenario, we have 260 days against the 10 days that we had on the NPRDA side. Then post the last days around the decision making, the dates remain as they are, fixed in respect of both. So here we wanted to create a comparison between the two scenarios, just to give honorable members a sense of what is the impact of the alignment process and the process of legislation. With regard to the resource implications of the alignment process, additional officials are ordinarily required that GMR be effectively implemented. And as I outlined earlier on, that we had a task team focusing on capacity implications, which highlighted that the resource requirements were based, one, on the longer iterative processes not previously required in terms of the MPRDA, some of the additional functions not previously required, such as listed activities, waste management, etc., the review of documents not previously required in terms of the MPRDA process. Still on resource implications, National Treasury made the funds available to capacitate the department to discharge this responsibility, which funds were then made available for compensation of employees through a reclassification process. And the funds were used to create an additional 35 posts of assistant directors, which have been filled, and all the employees or officials are on the payroll of the department and have been deployed to the various regional offices and have also been trained, and some other parts of training is ongoing. And based on the implementation plan, as a department, we then embarked at the time on the recruitment process. We also provided for IT equipment for the additional personnel, as well as the accommodation and furniture. Next slide. In terms of the elements of the implementation plan, what we sought to do first was to understand the department. I will start with the one in the at the part of understand the Department of Environmental Affairs assessment process, identify the scope of work, fund the structure within the constraints, recruit and train personnel, procure equipment, align guidelines, templates and checklists of SAMRAT, appreciate the limitations on prospecting rights and bulk sampling, adjust acceptance letters, including provision for Department of Water and Sanitation, address application fee issues, amend regulations, arrange for electronic linkages of system, prepare and arrange various awareness workshops so that we don't leave our stakeholders behind. So, in a nutshell, these are the very important elements of the implementation plan that is guiding how we do this process going forward. And with regard to the current status and the implementation progress thus far, we're completed. One, the agreement and the meeting on a time frame alignment, that one is completed, as I outlined on the presentation and the slide on time frame alignment. The various pieces of legislation have also been amended. The appointment and the placement of the 35 personnel I spoke about earlier on has also been completed at the regional offices. Provision of office space, IT equipment and furniture too has been finalized. Adjustment to business processes too has been completed. Change management workshops have been conducted for all environmental personnel within the department. Training on air quality waste management licensing has also been completed for all environmental officials. Guidelines, templates and checklists have been completed for process application. What is currently being finalized is adjustments that is work in progress based on the revised EIA, Environmental Impact Authorization Regulation. In terms of current status, and implementation progress is ongoing. This relates to the enforcement task team that is continuously engaged in joint inspections with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Department of Water Affairs with the support of the National Prosecuting Authority. In this regard, the DMR regional offices actively participate in enforcement activities with the department that I've referred to. And all the regional environmental managers are engaged in experiential training, currently engaged in the process of prosecuting illegal mining case on a case study basis in conjunction with the Department of Environmental Affairs. What is currently ongoing is that the University of Pretoria has been appointed to train environmental mineral resource inspectors. Thus far, we have identified 31 officials who are attending the course, and this will be held at the University of Pretoria. It's commencing on the 24th of November, and the final exam end is January 2015. We internally also have dedicated and one chief director to focus or dedicated towards environmental enforcement as a way of strengthening our enforcement and the state of readiness, capacity to implement. This is a very important initiative. And in conclusion, this project represents a best model on coordinated government efforts in improving the investment climate within mining South Africa. The One Environment System for Mining, Environment and Water Use Authorization aims at the implementation of the mining sector strategy as we outlined. And as PMR, we are ready to implement the One Environment System for Mining in South Africa. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. I have a few minutes by left. There are no additions. Okay. Okay, Honorable Smith.
Yes. Can I just on page slide 14, it says Department of Water and Sanitation will run their projects in parallel depending on the catchments. They will not always achieve 180 days, but will achieve 200 days to decision. That's a bit problematic because it seems to be a qualification which draws a line through the whole time frame process from a quick reading of this slide. The second issue is page 6. Proposed option 1 to the process, follow to streamline the water management process, is pose constitutional challenges. Just some indications to what challenges those would be. I suppose it's in accordance with the constitutional allocation of functions to the different departments, but you could just indicate to us what the challenges were in your view. Then a slide, but it's a slide before 19, probably 18. I have difficulty understanding on the right-hand column, it says the MPRDA scenario, it's a graph, yeah, there you go, 10 days, that's 300 days on the far right, and next 10 days. I'm not quite sure how that fits in, because there's a 43 days to accept or reject. So I'm not sure where the 10 days. I'm just trying to factor in the 10 days and compare to the 43 days, just more to the left of that. Just explain that to me. And then when is this structure, this process due to kick in? Because that's an ominous lacuna, because there's no date of implementation as far as I understand.
Mr. Chair, it's a related question in a more general sense. Those deadlines that are spelled out on slide 10, what happens if they're not met? Secondly, slide 19, How many additional officials are needed? You talk about 35 and 31 going on training course. Am I right that there will be 35 additional officials?
Mm-hmm.
And why only 31 being trained? Is it because you can't find the other four? Third question, does the DMR have adequate funding for this? Lastly, how many people will actually be conducting inspections countrywide once the system is in place?
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I apologize. I haven't been to this committee for the budget system. On the presentation itself, Chair, I must say I'm not really impressed. There's not really, it seems like a lot of headings with no meat to it. I'm really not impressed with this presentation. Let me start from the back here, page 13. This project represents the best model on coordinating government efforts to improve the investment climate. I made a few notes while the presenter was busy. The Mineral and Petroleum Resource Development Bill passed in Parliament earlier this year appears to do exactly the opposite of what the NDP proposed. It increases the administrator's discretion of delegating important regulatory functions to the minister, particularly in regard to local beneficiation of minerals. The bill likewise abolished the open access system for the granting of rights. And none of these provisions seems or appears to be investment enhancing. Now, there's a lot of pros and cons to this as well. We've, in the automotive industry, for example, if we have in the platinum, the catalyst of the vehicles, we can create many, many, many job opportunities in this country. We can buy platinum in this country from what the overseas market is buying it for. So it cuts both ways, but there seems still to be a lot of loopholes in this. Also, a very big concern to me is the amount of mining license that was in Mpumalanga alone, nearly 4,000 mining licenses were granted. I can't remember the exact figure, but 3,900 and something mining licenses. And this is really scary. We must, the whole of Mpumalanga has been dug up. I think we, firstly as South Africans and more so you as the Department of Mineral Resources, has got a responsibility to make a meaningful contribution to the use of our natural resources in a sustainable way to protect our resources and the environment. And this is really not happening. It seems like everyone can apply for a license and just get away with it. It seems that it's who you connected to lately, not for the better of the country. I'm also concerned, maybe not so much on this, but with the migration labor system. Maybe it's not the problem, but that's still also a very big concern for me in the mining industry. It's a pleasant hangover from colonialism and apartheid and still a scar on this industry. Maybe on another one. Thank you. Okay.
The presentation for Manado for sure. I think I also want to just dwell on the issue of the date that has been put here, Chairperson. If you look at the slide on page 9, it talks about 300 days for the mineral right and 180 days for prospecting right. But also what was said by the Honourable Member on page 10, you have 180 days for EMP to be submitted and 120 days to be approved. I just really wonder what happens if these days are not met, because we have a tendency of these things to go on endlessly for years and they just continue to run year in, year out, and there are no actions undertaken to that. So I'd like to understand, as the Honourable Member has raised, what happens if these dates are not met? Thank you.
I want to do a follow-up, Honourable Estes, and before they could answer your question.
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I was just thinking of something else as well. I've seen now on page 12, training on air quality and waste management licensing. Waste mining is completely polluting the Vaal River for existence. You know? And it doesn't help giving training to waste management and things like that. Rand water can't actually keep up. The industrial half of this country is going to fall apart because Rand water, because of mining, because of the incompetence of mining to in their waste management. And Rand water is under so much pressure because of the mining's inability to keep up or to do sufficient waste management. Thank you.
Okay. Probably, don't you think that's why that I'm not saying they shouldn't respond. But I hope you'll still be here. Don't you think that it's a matter also that even the next presentation will have to take into consideration the one that is, because I think mainly part of the crisis, not denying with what you have currently in operation and the presentation, which to me seems to be, I must say, seems to be a pre-mining process, if one were to use that word, rather than, I can't get a sense that it does talk to post-experiences. That's why I'm saying, looking at the two, we might have to come back even on that issue on the next presentation in relation to how the management of what becomes the consequence, which is what I think you are also trying to relate to. But my all the issues that you have raised, I think there is a question that to me that arises. My first thing is that, not in a bad faith, I know the paper might be too small, but it's very eye-challenging. I tried to look there. You now made me to realize that I might have a little bit of a problem with my eyes. Maybe I must be like others who use four instead of two. But when I look there and try to come here, I still encounter the same problem. So I request that probably next time, no matter how big it is, it can go to the next one. Then let's try to assist. Because now going there doesn't help me. But also coming here, then the second thing, I think that can I get clarity on this thing, was two things, and I recall this in the recent midterm by the Minister of Finance. I'm trying to get the allocation Well, part of the worry that sometimes we have is that if I'm not trying to undermine, if we can get clarity, what becomes the role of this assistant director? Because in some cases, what gets loaded is management instead of the personnel that is supposed to be doing the work. So can we get clarity, what becomes the mandate? Because I wouldn't like a situation where there's a hierarchy and where the actual work is supposed to be done, we are then being told there's a shortage of personnel. The direct, secondly, is that a permanent allocation? Or was it a once-off? Because I heard quite correctly that you have to make, if one were to use that, a consideration of an accommodation, of reworking your organogram so that you can accommodate the establishment of new post, which there is soundness. Obviously, the work might be permanent. Is the allocation from treasury now permanent? Or was it a one? Because it will then make us to ask the next question, is it going to remain the same amount? Or is it going to be a fluctuating one? And who administers? What is the manner of managing or monitoring that implementation of the usage of the yes, because I'm sure treasury, when they put money, they have to make sure that that money goes to the cause. What mechanisms will be used? I can't sit here because I'm not sure. When I was dealing, I made one of the numbers can help me. Whether that was part of the presentation when we were dealing with the digital art processes. I can't remember, yeah, sitting here, yeah, getting that information. And if it did, it might be very smart. So I think if we can get clarity on the, not just the people, because I understand the people, but how is it being used, how is it being managed or monitored, and how do we make sure that it's compliant with what the intended objectives? Because I would prefer it to use the work to have more officers who do the work than people who manage. Sometimes we get managers that don't manage anything. So if we can get the actual mandate, it may be related to what was being said as to who does the work in the regional office. Okay.
Thanks. I will start with the questions asked by the and comments made by the Honorable Chairperson. Dealing with the role of the assistant director, as well as we start, and linking it back to the budget. And when an allocation was first made, it came in the form of user credits, and we, working with National Treasury, effected the reclassification so that we are able to recruit and get on board the personnel that we needed. I also need to emphasize that the fund we always intended for implementation of this, so it was a technical issue we need to work with them on, and that led us to appoint 35 assistant directors that we have spoken about, which are spread across the entire regional offices. It is important to highlight that work happens or takes place at an assistant director level. Because we accorded the importance and link that importance to the level and the responsibility. So that using a diamond-shaped structure, we then are able to have work taking place at an appropriate level, which we deem to be an assistant director, other than at the level of the officers. We do have few officers, but not part of this. But that is the strategic decision that we then had taken. Hence, all of them are at that level of an assistant director. It is also quite important to highlight that outside the 35 that I had spoken about, we also have within our existing structure a capacity within my environmental management section in the form of assistant directors, officers, and deputy directors who are charged with the responsibility in the sector. So the allocation that we have, Honorable Chair, was not the one of the good change the mind going forward. I also need to brief the honorable members that as part of strengthening monitoring and enforcement activities, there's an allocation, additional allocation of 42 million over a MTF period that has been made available to the department for MTRD related activity, which will cover the entire portfolio, which will also assist in strengthening enforcement and compliance activities, which will answer the question that also was asked by the honorable. And yeah, I would leave it at that.
The question on Lorima is, and under was what happened to the last one. The interesting thing is on this particular slide, there are stages there where there was specific deadlines, where environmental affairs never had deadlines for the public to meet, but only had deadlines for their own departments to meet. So what they have done now is they've had all systems deadlines. If public now does not deliver certain documents like a feedback on that, the basic assessment report, if that is not sufficient, then essentially that's a fatal step, and the application would then end up getting misused. The same would go for the implementation. It is exactly the same at this stage as well, that if the EMP in the MPRDA scenario is not submitted, then the application has no discretion to actually extend the time. So that is what happens with the deadlines of the machine. But that slide, which showed the comparison, which also gave rise to another question, I think also by yourself, the slide that gave the comparison. Can you just get that present? The question was the 10 days and so forth. All we're trying to illustrate is that if you look at the empty body A scenario, can you just show both together, please, for you?
And
that's it. Let's not zoom in if we can just see the whole thing together. Yeah. The issue was that if one looks at the MPRDA scenario, there was an only 80 days to conduct an EIA and submit an EIA. And then there was 60 days that this had to be sent around for consultation. In order to meet the deadline, there was only 10 days after that, only 10 days left really for the environmental official to finalize his report, after which other people had to, the Mineral Water Administration and the regional manager and the decision maker head office had signed as well. So the environmental official, if he didn't get a property correct report, he had to then try and plan, or he or she had to then try and plan this process on the left hand side through administrative justice, try and plan that 260 days' worth of attendance and it made it extremely difficult because the NPODA assumed that you would get a correction. And that was creating all kinds of problems. What we're trying to illustrate here is that this one environmental system, because you're getting a report or the initial reports right from day one, you've actually got 250 more days to do a proper job and to achieve timelines. So there's a vast improvement in the ability to achieve these timelines.
I think all the questions I think have been how many people there's the 35 people and the 31 people are not necessarily the same. We have got a total staff complement of somewhere in the order of to process the more intensive NEMA process applications. The 31 people that are going for training are being trained, and that includes senior managers, 10 senior managers, it includes people with degrees ranging from degrees to master's degrees, some form of public prosecutor, criminology, all of those sort of things. It's not just environment to be able to enforce the compliance of this, to be able to go through the same process that Work Affairs has and Environmental Affairs has with the green resources. So we mustn't link the two to be in the same.
Then the training is ongoing. This is the first achievement. Next year we'll be having another intake, and this is intended to be an ongoing training that we are having. We are not going to be cautious.
There was also a question that was posed by Honorable Bosses relating to Mpumalanga and the number of license granted in the region of 4,000. Just to contextualize that. The figure of 4,000, I assume, they have referred to the applications other than the licenses that we have, because in terms of our records, the number of applications, or rather, granted rights are far below 1,000 that we are currently having on our business funds. And then we also have noted the observations made with regard to the presentation and the comments that we made regarding the MPRDA. But just to highlight that the construct, MPRDA will always say it's a progressive piece of legislation that is in its evolution, so always guided by very important sector strategies, working with stakeholders to position this important industry to be one that is globally competitive. And never is it the intention for it to be the opposite, and in our endeavor to refine and hone the machinery for implementation, it is with a view of ensuring that we continuously aim to ensure that our industry, which is mainly key to our economy, continues to do nothing but drive development and economic growth.
Okay.
Okay.
Honorable Steven, Honorable Smith, Honorable Jose Machala, Honorable Maholo.
Okay, thank you. I was so busy, I just got my phone here, unfortunately, to Google it. But a figure came to mind, I remember it, and I'm fairly sure that the figure is 3,936.
mining license only in Mpumalanga. 3,936. I'm actually busy to Google it. That was issued for the last 10 years. So I can't agree with the figure that this is issued.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't recall hearing the answers to question slide 6, what constitutional challenges. I still don't know what the answer is to slide number 14. The 300 days to take a decision by, and I still don't know when it will be put into operation.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is with regard to the one people attending the courses that is offered by the University of Pretoria. How many white people and black people and also disability are being taken into consideration? Because I'm afraid we might be talking of some only men who are going for these courses and not considering the other sexes. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Professor. Let me also welcome the presentation. It's indeed informative. My question is on slide number 8, on interdepartmental project implementation. I can see there's ministers, DGs, and then on the capacity, communication, whatever, on the bottom, how many people are involved there? And then the other thing is, before these departments came together for this process, the period of licensing, how many days did you took before? Was it still 300 and still 300 now? Because I think, as we have alluded, that the administration here is just to fast-track the processing of license so that people might not go and make an application to water, environment, and then to mining rights. How many days did it take before? Thanks.
Something honorable, I'm not well quoted, but I'm sure it's just for today. Yes, honorable, I know the country.
Is there any jump in the queue as well?
No, you are right. I know the country. Only think later.
All right, well, I'll take my opportunity. Thanks very much for the answer on deadlines not being met, and you've explained very well how the applications will fall away if it comes from the applicant side, and how it's going to be easier for the department to process. But still, there might be an occasion when the department are in processing time. What happens when it's the official spot?
Okay. There is someone may not remember in your slide. It might be. I was already with the question. I'm not sure that's what it meant. When you talked about 150 or even less than that, I'm not sure about the number of mining companies that are operating without water license. The number, I may not remember the figure here, but I was asking myself, how would that be possible? Is it not a precondition? One. Two, is that some body that I met and he just said this thing as a joke. But I think it was a little bit serious. And the problem when I come to another department. Then he said, no, you know, in that committee of yours, we need to come and tell you that your people who report to you are undermining the legislation. And I think he said the figure was much higher than even those 150 related in the state of mining companies that are conducting mining activities without water license. I can guarantee, I may not know the figure, but it's more than even the 150 I'm guessing. It was a huge number that was shocking. Now, the question arises, even the point that Honorable Stephen is talking about, we may not be able to resolve it here. But probably we should make a question and consideration. Is it possible that we have more than what is being presented here in terms of your mining license? And if it is not, why would because the problem is that we can't get the answer now, but it means it's an information that can be access to the public domain. That in your record you have in the public domain is another thing. So I think it would be important just to look at what could be the possibility of certain information that contradicts itself.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll start with a few that Honorable Estation raised. Indeed, Honorable, the migrant labor system remains a star of the industry, but there is concerted effort and work being done to completely do away with the migrant labor system. In fact, now the President led tasking is particularly focused on working with us and other affected departments, the industry, organized labor, so that under the auspices of the framework agreement, it is one of the key focus areas of the framework agreement work to do away with the scar that remains on our faces. And I think, Honorable Estation, you would appreciate that in terms of the current legislation, the first come, first serve, there is no basis whatsoever that the department can deny an application if it meets the requirements. And so if there are 4,000 applications received in Mpumalanga and all of them meet the minimum requirements, in terms of the current law, we would be in breach of our law if we do not process those applications and grants. And it is precisely for that reason that we have reconsidered the first come, first served approach and introduced the current section 9 so that we can introduce the sustainable resource management. And I think that the contradiction inherent in the perhaps what seems to be excessive issuing of licensing and what is being proposed as a measure of introducing sustainable development, resource management and development demonstrates the gravity of and the complexity of the issues that we are facing. But we are certainly giving it our concerted effort to ensure that we achieve that sustainable development. Thank you. I will hand back to my colleague.
Thank you. The question on the constitutional challenges, those who initially identified by the Department of Environmental Affairs, but I think it has to do with the issue of competencies between national competencies and local competencies. For instance, the air emission licenses, even at this stage, are not going to be... The issue of national and provincial competencies, for instance, the air emission licenses, which in terms of this process that we identified here, the intention is that those air emission licenses will, when it's mining, also be dealt with by mining. But there's a challenge there because they are currently the competency of the local authorities and it has to be somehow brought back to environmental affairs and so forth. It's those sort of things that are to be ironed out. The 300 days issue. There are certain catchments that Water Affairs deals with where they cannot or do not want to give a general authorization. Normally a prospecting right, in general, they would deal with it in terms of a general authorization, which would basically more or less mean that you don't really have to go through the whole process of getting a water use license, and that be almost an administrative procedure. But there are certain catchments where they have, which are sensitive in terms of water scarcity, that they have deemed there is no way that they are going to consider any kind of general authorization. And those ones, and I think there would be exceptions, those ones, they would want to do a full water use license process, and their water use license process is going to take the same time as the mining right. So there would be these exceptions where they would take longer. When does it come into operation? Subject to my colleagues, they have to say, we are ready to come into operation today if necessary. We are certainly ready to come into operation on the 8th of December, when the 2008 Amendment Act suggests that we need to come into operation. We are ready to come. So I think there was something else. The question on the 31 people and how many males, how many whites. Of the 31, there are two white people, I think. The balance between male and female is about 50%. Other questions, Mr. The questions relating to the IPIC and how long did mining last take?
The question was how long did it take with the outside existing system for the mining part of the system? What we can highlight is that it used to take, because the process was not met, it used to take anything longer than 2-3 years, in some cases longer than that, because you then don't have control over how long ultimately water use license would be issued. And some mines, as Honorable Chair was indicating, are still deemed to be operating without water use license. And that then demonstrates the magnitude of the challenge that we are facing. So, it's how it is at the moment. It really is a big challenge. It should take very, very long.
I think, Honorable Chair, I think also in terms of the water use license, in terms of the current legislation, there's no interface between
the work of GMR and the issue of the water use license. And that is precisely why the presentation today seeks to then streamline those processes so that they are aligned. So I think that we could seek that information from our colleagues in the Department of Water and Sanitation, but it is information that would not be administered nor resident in the DMR in terms of the current regulatory framework.
One question on this. Is the official stance the National Water Manager, very short couple of pages, but the issue is that if there is a deviation from, in terms of that act, if there's a deviation from this alignment process, then the ministers have to get together and resolve that, because they have to work in accordance with this alignment process. If there's a deviation, the three ministers have to resolve it.
Okay. Honorable Arima, Honorable Schmidt.
Okay.
Honorable Esteban. Now, going for the last time.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This deadline of December the 8th, we're still outstanding one piece of legislation being signed by the President. What happens if the NPRDA is not signed off before December the 8th? What position does that put you in?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe it's a misunderstanding under which I labored, but I understood the whole process concerning the issuing of a license, whether it's a prospecting license or a mining rights license, that the water use license would follow after the issuance of such a mining rights prospecting license. The impression was created that somewhere along the line, because these processes were to be conducted simultaneously, that this impression was created, and I can't seem to substantiate or to find any other guidance as to when all these different departments have followed their process, whether their licenses will be issued simultaneously, or am I misreading the flow chart? Because I just want to understand whether a company can then, as they did in the past, go and mine, because they think they have their right to mine, because the mining rights is the issue. But the water license, or the whatever, is the condition precedent had not been complied with, and therefore they should not be mined. So is there going to be a difference in the issuing of the mining right in comparison to when the water use license and etc. had been issued?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the gentleman right at the end there answering some of my questions. Just further to that, I'm happy to hear that they want to do away with the migrant labour. So that not only creates a big problem for Home Affairs, it also creates big problems within the local community around the mine. That they don't get or benefit in any way from the industry on their doorsteps, for one. And then on the issuing of the license, it doesn't matter how many licenses are issued. According to our constitution, this DMR, this department, also have a responsibility to the environment, to our resources, to look and protect our resources as well, and not to just issue licenses. It doesn't matter if they met all the criteria. We can't have in one province have 4,000 miners. Maybe we will cover it in the next presentation and left unattended and chaos. We also have a responsibility to our people. We do need agricultural land as well. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
my grandmother want to ask my grandmother. Yeah, my grandmother. But it's okay. I'm just joking. But all of you, most of you, are not from here. You came here to work.
Okay. Okay.
The question asked by Honorable Lord was regarding the date of the 8th of December. In the context of the case of the NTSB, what happened? We are, the response is that we are proceeding, going ahead with the implementation of the system. As my colleague was indicating, who also happens to be the chief director responsible for the system, we are proceeding with the implementation of the one and only system.
The question was, yes, when was it that started? The idea, what actually happened was, previously, the water use license was not even, could not be applied for before connectivity existed. So they would wait,
I'm sure your kids are so easily home. But the father will never show you.
I'll bring it closer. That water use license wasn't applied for, or could not be applied for, before the mining rights had been granted. And then there were no clear time frames. So what this has done is, firstly, the notice of intention to apply for a water use license must be lodged at the same time as the environmental authorization. And that initiates the process, which only is the start after. And then Water Affairs has committed that by that 300th day, they will have a decision on a mining right, which is a huge step forward, because now mining companies will know when they get the right, they will not have that problem. They may have to, in exceptional cases, in certain catchments where general authorizations can't be considered, have to wait also 300 days. But generally, in 180-odd days, they would know if a water use license is going to be granted. I think, however, have we answered all the questions? Was there something?
No, nothing in my time.
We'll reserve the next questions, because the inputs are not far apart from each other. And I only request that even if, because there's only one person who made an apology in this house, that you allow to be detained for some few minutes until he finishes whoever's going to do the next presentation. We will allow honorable members to do matters arising even on that presentation that will be coming. So that's the only way I can accommodate. So if there was another follow-up, they will keep it. And when we finish the next presentation, or if the next presentation touches on a matter that was presented now, they will also be able to go back to your presentation and remind us of what did you say. So allow me. Only one person made an apology. So, because you are allowed also to make an apology to the excuse, but you didn't. Can you get the next presentation?
you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The next presentation provides a briefing on the progress we have made in dealing with this notion of derelict and ownerless mines. We thought that it would be appropriate to start the presentation by locating derelict and ownerless mines within its appropriate context. And the context is as follows. Formalized mining in South Africa started in 1886 with the discovery of gold in the Bass Basin and subsequently the diamonds in the Northern Cape. And for many years of mining in this country, there had been absolutely no environmental legislation. So people just had to mine, extract, and when they finished, they walked away. That is the reality we are facing. For 104 years, people mined, and all that they needed at the end of the mine was take their bags and go and do other things. It was only 1956 that the Mines and Works Act introduced a very arbitrary requirement of, at the end of the mine, put a fence around the mine so that the cattle doesn't fall into the pit. So you can imagine what is the life cycle of a fence around the mine. And so that did not help very much our cause for environmental sustainability. And so only in 1991, when the Mining and Environment Summit held in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, the whole notion of sustainable development began to be looked at and looked at properly. And so out of that, the mine rehabilitation enforcement only then became an integral part under the mine rehabilitation section of the Minerals Act 50 of 1991. This act empowered the regional director to approve environmental management plans and to issue closure certificate to release mining companies from the rehabilitation liability. So it was only 1991 that this was introduced. And so it was further augmented by the MPRDA of 2002, which effectively introduced this notion of the sustainable development approach in line with the constitutional requirement. And I think, as Honorable Member raised it aptly earlier, that the MPRDA, one of the key objectives of the MPRDA is to give effect to the environmental rights as contained in Section 24 of the Constitution. What do we mean by MPRDA introduced sustainable development approach to mining? It brought in the notion of social license to operate. I think for the first time, and this is a global trailblazer, which other mining jurisdictions have followed, after South Africa introduced the notion of social license to operate. We see now other jurisdictions have followed this South African success story. Of course, economic growth is very important, without which we do not have mining, we do not have jobs and so on. So yes, the social aspect, the economic aspect. But the third part, which is the focus of our presentation today, is it introduced stringent environmental requirements. And those span the detailed environmental management plan as well as the environmental impact assessment. It recognized that central to the administration of our economic resource development is public participation. And so the MPRDA introduced that public participation so that the people have a say in the development of these mineral resources and the extent to which they affect their environment and their lives. the determination of the quantum of the financial provision adjusted on an annual basis. It introduced closure or issuing a license with a closure in mind. So that already when you apply, your closure plan must be part of your application. And so these are some of the progressive moves from where we were. And it also introduced requirements for effective monitoring of the environmental management plan and its implementation. Of course, the MPRDA was and is not in isolation in seeking to ensure that there is responsible environmental compliance in respect of mine development. There are other pieces of legislation, the NEMA as well as the National Water Act, which were talked about at length by my colleagues in this presentation previously. Honorable members, in 1999, South Africa joined the world in banning the extraction of asbestos. 1999. So it was early in 2000, well, immediately after the banning of extraction of asbestos, that the DMR initiated a research program on derelict and ownerless mines. We did not want to just begin to talk about derelict and ownerless mines. We needed to establish a baseline understanding of the scope of the problem and the extent of the problem of derelict and ownerless mines in this country. We wanted to pilot implementation of the program, but at the time we were largely focused on the risk of asbestos. And during this time, part of our research was also to ensure that we can secure allocation of financial resources for this program of rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines, which all of this work was led by colleagues in the mineral regulation branch at that time. The function was subsequently transferred to mineral policy and promotion in 2009. But also we wanted to develop a database for DNO, which was estimated at about 6,000 mines at the time, and also to guide the establishment of the government task team constituted and chaired by the DMR, as well as the DST and the erstwhile Department of Water and Environmental Affairs. The initial estimates of the liability of derelict and ownerless mines amounted to 30 billion. So, upon conclusion of the initial research work, we were beginning to understand the quantum of the problem, and we thought then we were in a much better position to develop a national strategy for management and rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines in South Africa. This was concluded in 2009. The strategy includes, amongst others, finalization of the database of DNO so that we would appreciate where the problems are. But understanding the problems is one thing, but it also introduces a mechanism for ranking the risk so that we can begin to say, this is where the sites are, but this is the risk of each and every one of the sites, so that we can focus the resources that we have on the areas that pose the greatest of risks. We also developed such tools to measure minimum acceptable remedial measures. We call it the standard protocol to rehabilitate derelict and ownerless mines. And we directed the CGS as far back as 2005 to compile a list of derelict and ownerless mines and sites in South Africa. They used various sources of database to ensure the credibility of the data that they were collecting, and they came to about 8,000 mines at the time. And as this work was further refined, it came to approximately 6,095 mine sites. Of course, when we finished the strategy, we then took it back to the CGS in 2012 and said, CGS, now that we have this strategy and we have a ranking metric, we want you to go back to this database and please ensure that we verify in line with the content of the strategy. And out of the 6,095 sites that they have in the database, they have now concluded the verification of 4,378 mining sites. There are still 1,717 sites that are a subject of verification. In the next slide, honorable members, and I must emphasize that this is not to say by any means, but it is really to demonstrate the spread nationally of the BNO sites. You see the greatest of concentration in the historical areas of mining in the country. The green is sites that have been verified out of the 6,095, and a little bit colorblind there, but the reddish maroon color is the sites that are yet to be verified. In the next slide, honorable members, this table demonstrates the how we have done now the granular analysis of the sites. We no longer say to you there are 6,000 sites. The sites have been prioritized, and you can see we also categorize those sites in terms of the provinces within which they occur. And there are 182 high priority sites. Those are the sites that have to be rehabilitated like yesterday. And then we have the moderate priority sites. Those are the short-term focus. And then we have the low priority sites, which are the medium to long-term sites. In green are the sites that do not require any rehabilitation. So we've gone back and said, well, in terms of this criteria, there's 1,728 sites that actually don't pose any risk in as far as the technical analysis is concerned. As part of this verification, we also established that there are 536 sites that are owned. And so that's readily the liabilities then transferred to the owners so that they can deal with these challenges that of rehabilitation. Honorable members, the last column is the one that worries us a little bit, in that these are the areas where the CGS has gone in but was denied access to undertake the verification. There's a very great concentration of those areas where they were denied access in two provinces in particular, of Mpumalanga and Limpopo. The next slide, honorable members, the ranking metrics that I've been alluding to. These are some of the attributes. I will not go through all of them. But if a site is proximal to communities, it is an immediate threat. And we will show you a bit later where that is. That threat could be physical, but the site could also result in water contamination, and there has already been reference to the experience of some of the agencies in respect of water contamination. So these are some of the areas we look at in terms of the ranking. If the site presents a risk of wind airborne risk and effects to local communities, the combustion of gases from the mines in respect of coal development is a consideration. Does the site have an impact on the sensitive or protected area or ecosystem is one of the attributes that we look at. So once we have subjected the database through this ranking metrics, honorable members, in the left slide, that graph demonstrates in color where the high priority, moderate priority, and low priority sites are concentrated, and you would notice that as yet, notwithstanding that we have not concluded the verification process, that the provinces of Eastern Cape, Free State, and the Western Cape do not have a high priority site at this stage. And of course, as we continue to verify, we will be updating our craft to demonstrate where the areas of risk are at. In terms of progress of our implementation, honorable members, to date, we have rehabilitated 18 asbestos mines, 11 of which are located in the province of Northern Cape, and the other three in Limpopo. Those are the two provinces in which asbestos mining has previously been concentrated. In addition to the asbestos mine sites, we have also rehabilitated 145 mine sites during this time, since 2000 when the process was initiated. The next slide, honorable members, the top two pictures, left and right, I intended to show you the pre-rehabilitation and post-rehabilitation. And on this side in particular is the asbestos that has the risk of airborne transmission to local communities, number one. And when it rains, the asbestos running into the river system and contaminating the river system. And you will notice then on the right that the site has been rehabilitated, and we are confident that these measures have eliminated the risk inherent in that site left as it is. And on the bottom two pictures, there was an asbestos dump that was leveled and soil cover placed over it. And that soil cover was eroded over time, and then the risk of asbestos. You can see that site is within the community environment. There are people living here, walking there, children playing there every day. And so as part of the rehabilitation on the right-hand side, you can see that we have planted grass there and turned it into a recreational facility for the community there. Slide over. This is a dangerous holding that is left open very close to communities, and this is where people and children fall in if these sites continue to be left unattended to. And to the right of that southwest shaft is a demonstration of what we would have done to close that site, and the same applies with the Wilsonville shaft at the bottom. Honorable members, in the progress that we have made today, it has not been without challenges, but we use these challenges as a learning so that we can better refine our program of implementation of our rehabilitation of BNO sites. What are some of these challenges? The first one is that some rehabilitation sites require significant resources in terms of human, financial, and otherwise. And in terms of the financial resources, they would exceed annual allocations, the annual allocation for GLO in its entirety. And so we go into our APP and we say, well, we do 20 sites. And you get onto an Oshizueli site, for instance, that requires 95 million rand to rehabilitate properly. It requires 95 million rand because it's a huge pit. They are mining under the school, and the school is now cracking. The children are under risk. The community immediately around that pit is facing a real threat of environmental impact. It is something that we cannot avoid. And so these are just examples of some of the challenges. So some years when we come to you, honorable members, and we have committed that we'll do 20 sites and we have done one, we will have a very good explanation as to why. And of course, some projects are very large in nature and they are multi-year versus our annual reporting requirements contained in the annual performance plan, as I have explained. The other problems that we have is in cost escalation. We try and cost rehabilitation of these sites so that we have a sense of what are the financial requirements for us to be able to implement this program effectively. And some of the variations at the phase of implementation vis-a-vis the original estimates, they are sometimes as much as 400%. And that has a direct bearing on how many sites we are able to rehabilitate, because we would have done our plan based on the allocation that we have, which does not increase at the same rate. The other challenge relates to security of DMR officials and those agencies we have contracted to do the work, particularly in areas where illegal mining activities are taking place. And related to that is that there are instances where we rehabilitate, and because of illegal mining, the areas that have previously been rehabilitated are then blown open, blasted by the illegal miners so that they can gain access into these underground facilities. In conclusion, honorable members, we have secured additional funding from this financial year. The National Treasury has recognized the importance of this work and augmented the budgets that we have had over the years. And so we have accordingly ramped up our annual targets from the 20 odd that we used to have to 50 sites annually. We commit to conclude the verification of the DNO mines within the next 18 months to 2 years. Asbestos remains one of the highest priorities for rehabilitation, and this is closely followed by sites that are very close to communities that pose the greatest risk to those communities in terms of health, safety, as well as environment, including water contamination. In respect of the sites that are blasted open by illegal miners, we are exploring other technologies as well as alternative material applications to use in those particular areas that are targeted for illegal mining, so that once we have closed that site, no one can open it again. Given the priority of this duty within the department, we are also looking at augmenting the internal resources within the department so that we can achieve what we need to achieve, what we have set out to achieve. And we are finally also exploring other meaningful mechanisms to optimize the management of derelict and ownerless mines and mine sites in order to mitigate not only the risk that is inherent, but also at the same time ensuring that responsible parties are brought to book, so that this liability is not only exclusively a liability of state. I thank you very much.
Okay. There is a report for your consumption. There's a one-shot suppression of the comments. I doubt this has ever happened. And let me keep up the good luck that says I'm doing. An honorable member has left questions for me to ask.
So I will do that. Whether you didn't ask me whether I agree or I disagree with the question, you just said they would have loved to ask those questions. So it's not me. There are questions among the honorable members that were left here by honorable Australian. And I will read them for the benefit of the members, and then I will give to those people that were supposed to answer them. In fact, it's one question broken into three. It makes, I must say, with the advice, an assumption, because it says, if only 1991, the legislation on mining licenses protecting the environment was passed, it says, one, on that one, it's A, that's where your question comes in, as to why most of the 90% of mining licenses issued in the past 10 to 40 years. I think supposed to be only. Then it says, why is there no consequences for flat license holders for mines that stop working to repair the immediate area or land? I think in simple terms that why are you not passing over the responsibility to close the mines to those who have given the licenses? The third one is about what happens to the labor force of those unattended, who used to work on the unattended mines. So that is not me. But you will answer those questions because I've read them. No, you can give their questions. They were left in the good care of the chair. So, at least I read them, so that if you find them wrong, you will say that's not what is written there. I read what was not. Honorable members, the already question. Unfortunately, I won't be able to do a follow-up on behalf of Honorable Stacey. Honorable members, Honorable Mandela, Honorable Smith, Honorable Tigilini.
Thank you, sir. So, I appreciate the presentation made by the EMR. Chair, we've just recently come from an oversight trip in Johannesburg, Gauteng province, in and around illegal mining. And I'm concerned, when we go through this presentation, some of these mines have been closed down and shut by the department. And then you find that with the pictures illustrated, they're trying to revamp the mines so that they are properly closed down in terms of the mining site. We found that they've been redug again, and that becomes a problem in the communities in and around that area, posing really dangerous scenes where people may fall into the shaft. I want to know, as far as the department, what are they doing to ensure that those are closed and sealed completely so that they are not reopened? Because it's all right to see a shaft that has been closed down in slide 14 on the Mines Valley shaft. If it's that, look, they should be dig on the side of that and they go through, okay? So what we have to ensure that we can really seal this up completely and not have them reopened. But also the rehabilitation of the land itself. How are we going to ensure that in future it is not destroyed by these illegal mining operations? Because I think with desperation, people do all sorts of stuff. So we would like to know exactly what is the department's intention in ensuring that those mines are totally closed. But with as well what Honorable Alvazan has raised, you have land that has been put to mining operators, and yet they are not owners of the land. So who do you really take to task in terms of holding accountable to rehabilitate the land and ensure that it is properly done? Because somewhere, somehow, it cannot continuously be the government's responsibility to be doing this rehabilitation of the land. Can we then have the mining operators themselves, or even the owners of land? If you follow the studies done by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, there are studies that land is not actually in the hands of government, it's in the private sector. So if land is owned by the private sector, why is it becoming the responsibility of government and the department to rehabilitate the land? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I ask, the impression has been created that a closure certificate following 2002 in PRGA is very difficult. So the question basically arises is, factually, how many closure certificates were there issued since 2002? Because that will either dispel or confirm that notion, and if so, the reasons. But the second issue is, you on page 5, I think it is, page 5, indicate the estimated liability to be in the region of about 50 billion. The last figure I heard was 50 billion. What is the figure at the moment? It could be still 50 billion, I don't know. The third issue is the amount budgeted for 2014-2015 for rehabilitation. I know at one stage it was 1% of the Tutsi village, and that's going to take 100 years to. So I see it's up to 50 sites per year, but the underlying notion is what is the amount, because that gives an impression that the importance given to it. There was just one other issue, Mr. Chair. I'll leave it for later. Thank you.
The issue of public participation, which I think we need to welcome the process of involving the communities. But it's just a mere contradiction or a requirement. In page 5, slide 9, you see, you ask the city as a position as your challenge to do some work and expect it. All others comply, but we have a different part who cannot comply. We do not allow them access. So they will deny it. Now, as the MTR now, if they deny your access, how are you dealing with the social labor plan as MTR? that are endorsed by Jalal, if they can just do it they wish, then I think we're supposed to play the same art now. The last one said, I think my colleague, Uman Weda, who was in the Africans, the shaft. You know, there's the issue of creating some kind of jobs. This is very good. You close the shaft, it's open tomorrow. You rehire him again. I think it is important that we have some kind of a clause in the contract in that particular company. Because you can't allow someone to play shadware. I would say a shadware. If how people are going to do it, because you spend some millions of dollars to make that flower. And therefore, as a change of the machine, it is as well. Now, we must find a way when you do contract with particular companies, of course, the same, so that we are able to bind them. They can keep us close. Now, we are going to employ one person for 20 years. He knows that they'll come back. Like here in Parliament, for example, in Parliament, they have lived here who normally not work. Every one month, it's 5 days. So, how many times before we come here? First Parliament, that's not happening. Now, we're in the fifth Parliament now. So, I'm raising that issue on that basis. The last one, I think from the previous slides now. So, I'll come here. It's a very simple process that I would talk about. Slide 4. You show us a very governance structure, which is a very good one, which is always assist us. It combines the three departments together as slide. It's a very simple one, very nice one, I like it. You know, it really is in that when you improve the personnel, by employing personnel, if we want to improve rank. We should not do that for issue of compliance only. But I think it is important that we have been able to have a turnaround now. If you have taken 200 days to do one, now, it's supposed that we come there because of more stuff. So I'm trying to say that I will always disagree with this notion of workers usual all the time. What you are doing is why the environment is doing something and the water is doing something else. And then I'm sitting in my office doing nothing for those things, waiting for those things to come. I think we need to have some kind of a finish, you know, in order to be able to achieve, you know, a particular product in a particular end and able to come back to the in full time. So I wanted to raise that particular matter. Thank you very much.
The only thing is that I'm not sure now, listening to this presentation and taking into cognizance the experience and the report of the oversight, taking into cognizance the report, not once, of the, what is the national, NC or any national coordinating, the task team, something to that. Only one thing that I know, South Africa is very good in academics. Looking at that presentation that they made at DMR, but also the presentation given by the Gold One and the Mine Health and Safety Chief Inspector, yes. Just asking myself sitting here, maybe we might be underestimating the magnitude of the problem at our hand. Or the military also, to a certain degree, I
around issues of environmental challenges. I'm just looking, I said it might be a very strong word, that those people, when I was on the oversight, I only come to one conclusion, probably they are more like what we call a prisoner. That they say a prisoner can start a way to get out, even if it's going to take 2 years or 3 years, using the spoon to open the hole to get out. And every time he opens, he pushes, and if he's going to, you plug, put it back as if it's normal, until it's enough to get out. So everything that they say is a prison order or is called a correctional officer, you do, you must be careful because it's starting, even your movement. Now, I came to that conclusion that Honorable Mandy, I'm not sure they have enough, they've got the highest IQ, if one is to say, because every means you seem to put into place, they took it as an advantage rather than a disadvantage. I'm not saying I'm answering for them, and your honorable beginning, it then poses a challenge that if it's something really that we can just say, within a spin of a coin and say we've got a solution to. Or it might require even the committee thinking more even out of the box on what can be done to deal with this situation. Besides the risk of the danger crime, but I think the point that was raised by the Honorable Estasia on the Van Basin, prior to a potential contamination of water and the redirection that can lead to the shortage of water, because they use massively in an, I can't even say it's unauthorized, because it's very, so there are many illegal activities that are happening around that mission. So I'm just saying, committee, can it park, and once we get questions, we also allow ourselves to think more as to what could be done, because I think this is going to be a huge task that unfortunately it can't be a fail of this department, it will be the fail of this committee, so that in the final analysis we can come up with a solution where we say this is what we think has to be done, rather than to ask what is being done. I'm just taking flagging that issue for yourselves, honorable members. It may not be just thinking about the solution, thinking about what can be the movement towards finding the solution, if we can go for assistance. But I think you can be able to answer some of the questions from starting from the ones of the of Honorable Estate.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Member. I think we would just like to follow up with Honorable Estasian on the statistics that you provided. Because unless I misunderstood the question on the 90% of mining licenses issued in the last 10 to 14 years, I didn't understand if 90% of what. But I think in terms of the question of the consequences for mines that stop working, there's a slight difference. Whereas we are talking about environmental rehabilitation, is that here we are looking at derelict and ownerless mines. So these are mines that have ceased to operate. They are not active. And so there are no employees to put in these sites. These are sites that are just left there abandoned. And so leaving them there abandoned poses a major risk, as we have explained. So, and therefore, what happens to the labor force and so on, there's simply no labor force in those mines. Honorable Mandela, the legal minds are really a problem. And I think this will also cover the comments of Honorable Chair. The best patient has not been completely minded. So there is the mind, there are shafts, and there is a lot of potential for, and that's why they still call mining taking place there. I think PDG would also help me here, but he probably continues to receive application for reclamation. So you have these old gold mines, and in fact, South Africa is said to still have 40% of gold reserves, which is a very, very, very deep. And then you have these interconnected shafts that run right across Gauteng. I mean, if you were to close those shafts, you probably need a few trillion dollars if you were taking that approach. And now you have multiple levels of risk. The one risk is that some of the shafts are very shallow. Sometimes these guys do not even blow the ceiling that they have put. If you seal it here, they dig a shaft themselves right next door and access those underground workings. And so I think that's why the department is working in that security cluster for, we are participating in the security cluster for illegal mining, because this is now, you can't resolve the problem of illegal mining with ceiling shafts. This is an illegal matter that must be dealt with through the security authorities. Having said that, however, Honorable Mandela, we are also working with CSIR to assist us with the type of material that we can apply in those areas that are of high risk. Because these guys have access to explosives. You know, like with the ATM bombings, for instance. Those access to those explosives, so you put your cement there, they put the explosives and they blow this thing up and then they go back in there. But we are looking at working with CSIR, and we are making good progress. And they are telling us that there is material that these explosives will not disintegrate. But we are yet to put that to test and satisfy ourselves. I think the question of the rehabilitation of land, it's perhaps one of the most important considerations for us, that whose liability is it? Is it the liability of state? Is it the liability of the landowner? Is it the liability of the operator? And that's why, in terms of the current law, the responsibility lies with the operator. But now when you look historically, it gets a little bit cloudy. And I think this is work that we will do more of, Honorable Mandela, and in good time we'll come back to you with a considered response. Honorable Schmidt, on the certificate, closure certificates, I think closure certificate was never meant to be issued so much, you know, because people don't do their work and they want to come to the department and say, I want a closure certificate. And if they don't get the closure certificate, they shoot off to the media and they shoot off to whoever can listen to them. I think that's an area that we are not alleging as a department. We'll give you a closure certificate when you have closed that site properly. And we have satisfied ourselves as government that we are not going to have these problems that we have inherited today. Unfortunately, we have not had many instances of people who are being who have done the closure as well as it has been prescribed. Having said that, we have wonderful rehabilitation programs in the Richards Bay Minerals site in Richards Bay. I think it has been deemed one of the best projects of mind rehabilitation in the world. And it has attracted PhD students from all parts of the world to come and undertake research there. And so there are those areas that are positive that we can learn from, and unfortunately there are those that we have to be able to decide. I do not have a number of how many closer certificates, but I do know that we have too many cases of people who believe that closer certificate is about submitting an application and working out for it. The 30 billion, you're quite correct, Honorable Schmidt, it was original estimate. We estimate that this has slightly more than doubled by now. And it's a very, it's an estimate. But with this approach that we have adopted now of verification of sources, where we are able to determine the high risk and so on and so forth, following that would be linked with quantification, and I think we'll be able to come with a better figure that we can present to you with confidence. We don't have much confidence with the current estimate. The budget in monetary terms, we used to average around 52 million annual allocation. And over the MTF, we've been allocated an extra 156 million. So in the first year, I think it's 42 million. And so that takes us to just over 90 million rents in this current year. And then in the following year, we'll be just around 100 million. And the outer year of this MTF will be at just over 100 million. Honorable, beginning in terms of public participation, the provisions that we have made are such that a member of community can submit an appeal through the REMDEC structure if they are grieved, if they are grieved by the you know, whatever concerns that they should have not been addressed, which requires that the REMDEC considers the appeal that has been submitted by a member of community. So it is not just a nice to have the consultation. And those structures have been established. The REMDEC is in place. My colleague DDG here has to consider REMDEC processes before he can even begin to consider a process in any application. I think in terms of those sites that we said they are denying access, it's similar to that one of employment. These are sites that are abandoned, so they don't have SLP obligations. These are sites that were left pre-1991. But what I have established now is that the bulk of these sites are interestingly national parks in these two provinces who are refusing access, but the reality is that it is a site that affects you know, the contaminate the rain, the river system, or if it's close to communities, it is something that we as a department are now intervening to assist so that we can gain access into those sites. I think on our own chair, let's start from this point. Are there any issues?
The one is the comment that was made with regard to the need to translate the alignment of time frames in doing business and users so that they are efficient, and for that point is not.
Okay.
Any follow-ups for the last time? Honorable Smith?
Oh,
you are the only one.
Do you understand from the two provinces that those properties fall within national parks? Is that up in a new debate? Is it national park? Is the government who's disallowing you access to those sites? That's not, is the people, is it illegal miners? Is it government? I'm just asking. Then the second issue is, and I'm not sure, and I seem to be misunderstood, but part of the process, and I think it's been considered from time to time, is the possible legalization of some of these illegal mines. Now, I'm not sure whether it can be done, I don't know whether it has been the subject of a study, because some of these mining should not take place, because I don't think illegal mining things should not take place because of the cost and the infrastructure and the cooling and et cetera, and the safety and the danger and whatever goes with it. But as a broad question, are there certain of those illegal mining operations which could possibly, considering safety, considering economic viability, concerning whatever prudent factors which one could consider as a policy development objective, by saying if it's an open surface and there's no whatever, if you can demonstrate technical ability, access to funds on a smaller scale, I'm asking in terms of a possible solution to what the chairperson raised to some of these illegal mining activities. And then, does rising water tables also have an impact? Because on the West Rand, for instance, Far West Rand, just south of Franklin, north of the Kriersdorp Game Reserve, water was gushing out of the shops. I know it's now under control with this comment. So does it have an impact on some of these illegal mining activities? Because I'm sure you can't mine those excavations anymore.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My ultimate, in those two provinces, it's not exclusively national parks, but it is mainly national parks. And it's consideration, you know, we have a problem of poaching of rhino, for instance, the national problem. This information is brought to us now recently. And that's why I said we are intervening as a department to assist CGS, because it is CGS that is doing the verification on our behalf. And so I believe that it's an area that we can readily resolve. But if we come and report it here, we felt strongly that we needed to indicate to you areas where we have problems. But we also have private claims that is problematic. With nice signs outside the gate that says trespass shall be eliminated. So all of those areas we are now seized with them to assist PGS with access to those sites. I think the other ones I'm scratching my head. Rising water tables. I don't believe that these guys. I think as Honorable Chair said, that these guys have amazing knowledge of the mining industry. They know where the water is concentrated and rising, and they know where they have access and they're able to work. And I think they are readily able to differentiate that. So in those areas where water previously was gushing out, you wouldn't have this problem. But certainly that water is not a common phenomenon throughout the entire West Basin, East and West Rand, and they know. So yes, it would have an impact, but
obviously we need to manage it and minimize it and minimize the risk. The legalization of illegal miners, now that's a very big question. And I think that that's something that and we have, you know, the scope of illegal mining is quite varied. I mean, it ranges from communities who believe that, you know, they can dig sand for their construction purposes and so on. And I mean, we have a program that helps to legalize those assets. Now here you are talking about a different kind of illegal mining. These are people who are entering mines that are operational, like in the Free State, for example, who carry guns, who have literally underground illegal activities, and so on. And I don't know if we are a government that wants to legalize that kind of activity. But as it relates to people who are operating because they do not have the right papers and authorization for them to mine, that program we already have. And we have assisted quite a number of them. If you look at our APP, where there's an item referring to non-financial support to SMMEs, this is an area where we really are helping people to come in, and be part of them is legalizing those who do not have authorization. Like I said, I don't know if we even consider a policy on legalizing criminals. I think criminals must be dealt with as criminals.
Okay, I think the point I was raising, the problem is that it's unfortunate we never got orientated when we were get orientated in a very harsh way. Because I'm getting convinced that illegal mining is a different form. There is an issue that will deal with your derelict and own knowledge. And there are issues that will change generally to illegal mining, which could be actively operational and in some cases ownerless and derelict mining. Because I recall in that presentation of the task team, they even raised issues of flooding the system on the actual active mine, where people can exchange the access cards and everything in order to go under. It's not something that is being done outside. It's an operation that is in existence, but it's how people go underground and the increasing number that's of those who go underground. So It's not just illegal, but it's a highly corrupted system where it goes. So that's why I was saying to the committee, I think we would have to think deeper that given all this information, I can ask a very silly, probably ruthless question, in order to do what? We'll have to answer that question. Because we get the presentation. But we can't be a committee of presentation. At some point, we will have to ask the hard question. If we have to go the unconventional and the untraditional processes, it's another the committee has to consider. But I'm getting convinced with all these presentations that it's much better when you are given more time rather than a time that starts at 9 and finishes at 12. And then next week you will deal with something else. We will have, that's the point. In my view, we will have honorable members to consider to say, out of all these things, where does this thing point us in the final analysis? I'm convinced it's pointing us to a point where we will have to consider working even outside the scope of what is regulated by Parliament, so that we can assist in coming up with solutions. It may not be a solution for all, but also go beyond also to say that it require only this committee on mineral resources, or it may require also that we look at other people. Among other things, I think that is left here is the fact that having put all the mechanisms, mine closure and so forth, in terms of your interventions in ensuring that there is enforcement of the law, unfortunately there is an absence of capacity. You can say all your people as much as you like. I think in the report that we submitted yesterday, we did raise that issue that you may have within the criminal justice system, people who are not specialists in dealing with this matter. The point that we raise around what the CGS has to do in collaboration or in working closely was part of the recommendation, one of the members that you made. Because among other things is that in terms of your criminal process, a person must be charged within 48 hours. And if it is not the case, that person must be released. I don't think that there's a warrant officer who's sitting in a police station with an experience of drawing the distinction between the stone and the gold. So these will remain the challenges. That's why I'm saying maybe the committee at some point will have to think outside the box and say, how do we begin to have an overarching strategy? Because I'm not sure whether there is an acceptance that just to have a task team at a national level that deals with that thing will be sufficient enough. That does it provide? Is there a dedicated team? Because people can meet like this and then after the meeting they go out, you take responsibility for your own. So I'm just saying these are some of the things the committee has to take those matters. In some cases, we're clear cases that say when these people they run away, the innocent people are supposed to arrest them. They take responsibility to make sure that they've got a market to sell. You see, I'm not accusing anyone, but in the oversight, they said so that the police, they take what we're thinking about. When they chase us, not all of them are chasing us in order to take us time back. Some are chasing us so that we can leave this thing, and then they take it and they give it somewhere else. So I'm saying it's like we are dealing with a matter that is much more bigger, even than just to make it and put it as a responsibility of the department. But I'm leaving to honorable members, it's never my intention. But my sense is that it may not be to this year or something, but we have to take this issue in my view. We can't take everything, but we must have one issue at a time that we are able to say, this is what we are dealing with. And if we have to invite some that within our own colleagues that can help, maybe we may come up with something more positive. I don't want to say for what. I didn't wish. Okay? I think with the report, we will say you can switch off the ignition, but don't get out of the car, because you might be invited again to take another chance. So we don't want to, when we say this is what you are doing, finally, you come back to us and then tell us, I don't know where it is that. All what you may need to do is just to improve what you have given. On that note, honorable members, can we get you very well? 1 minute. Honorable members, even if the minutes are not here, let me do the right thing. Yeah. We will bring them in the please not in the next meeting because we are sitting in the joint meeting. There is a letter that was circulated to yourselves. I think we have to honor that. There is a letter that we have circulated to your friends. You will recall that when that answer was given in the from the state administrator, when they gave the answer to the committee on why they have not complied, we made it clear that the request was that they submit what the information in writing, including that information that they would have suggested what is supposed to happen. I must say you would also recall that in the discussions, now the problem was not adopted in minutes, but I know what we discussed. We from the table this side, we said we will look at it if it has got anything of legal implication. We might come back, have them consulted. Unfortunately, I must be friends with honorable members. From that time, things were very active. But we looked at this on Monday, and we felt rather than to preempt, let the committee itself take a decision on how to handle the response from the state administrator. I can safely say in the report, rest in my dream as much as it stands. It's a report on a legal opinion. Two, it's a report on what they submitted previously. It's in three phases. Thirdly, it's a report that gives us their allocations policy. That's how I start. So I couldn't take it. I understood what you had made as a promise, but as I say, the letter is in front of you.
Honorable Mandela, Honorable Smith, Honorable Lorry.
Thank you, Chair. I want to outright say this is not satisfactory, what we received from the state administrator. It is not what the portfolio committee requested, and I would like, in terms of the legal opinion that they sent us, to refer this to the legal team here in Parliament to advise us on this, but it's clearly not what we requested, and we should, through the secretary, respond back to them to tell them that this is not what the portfolio had requested, and they must ensure that they furnish us with the information that we requested. Chair, thank you.
Honourable Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Mr. Mandela. The only thing I would like to add to it is that the legal advice also looked at the Power and Privileges Act, because the committee has certain authority in terms thereof to summon for information and or individuals, just with regards to that particular instance.
Honorable Smith, Lorimer?
Welcome,
thank you,
Mr. Chair. Good. Honorable Smith, Honorable Lorimer.
Can I suggest further that probably consideration this committee be made? First, I think let's correct one thing, because I think the reading the letter is in its response is wrong. When a matter is raised in a committee and a committee agrees, it actually suggests that it's a matter of the committee. It doesn't belong to a member of the committee. That response, in my view, is absolutely incorrect. So there is no request from a member of the committee. There is a request from the committee. Otherwise, if there is a committee, there was disagreement with the member who could have said so, that we disagree, and it could have been somewhere else determined in one way or the other. So as to who made the point in the meeting, it's not what we should hear. The committee agreed. Two, I think in my view, although the question will be in order to do what, we might have, whether this year or some the other time, depending also, I agree with honorable members, on what will come as a response, also consider, if we have to consult with you, we can do that. Inviting them again here, to come here, and tell us why they are troubling us with any kind of opinion, when they have asked any information. I am not taking away the issues of the powers and privileges, but the reality that they are an entity that reports here. So, and that's it, if members think. Thirdly, I think for me, either through the DG or the minister, we will have to also send our dissatisfaction in the manner that entity is treated for. That's an entity that responds or that is accountable to the department. And I thought I must put those things to honorable members, those four. If they are outside the ambit, you can say so. Is that agreed?
Agreed, Chair.
Okay. That matter is disposed of. I don't know if you say it's falling. Someone said that matter is falling down. Now, on the announcement, we will deal with some of the issues. I thought some other time. But just on the issues of the announcement, 1819 on the mining summit request declined. So that's the answer. Request declined. I don't know whether there are grounds to appeal. the request is declined. On the oversight is on the 23rd to the 28th. It means we are departing on the 23rd, and then we'll be there on the 23rd, and then we start on the 24th. We will do our level best, honorable members, because I know how punctual you are, to make sure that you are treated separately in the next joint meeting with Finance Portfolio Committee by providing you with the program. That's where you will be unique from others. You will get the program surely by next week, because the issues that some have not finally confirmed on what will be done. We also have to, I'm not sure whether honorable members did receive, or it was only those who share committee meetings. There is a program that was submitted by the House Chair for 2015. I think it ends in August. But we will have to come back and talk about it. If it needs the honorable members, it may not be here. Those who might be on the over, I must say, those who might be going to the over, please confirm on time so that you don't face the consequences of not getting accommodation in the first place. Because we are going to a place where accommodation is not in plain view. Where there are many people who are going. It's not that the accommodation is, it's when a place is popular and it's not equal, you can't deny. You can't pretend as if you are going to Gauteng when you are going to the Northwest. Yes, the capacity is not the same. So I don't know whether the members will come here and complain about the standard when they know they confirmed late. So if you confirm late, and I think honorable Mafola should enter because she might be staying at home when were there. So the sooner you confirm accommodation, the better. Then you're traveling, it's the better. I think that is all, honorable members. On that note, anything? Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You are now released. So you can have lunch. You can have lunch. That's in the head. Thank you.